And we see a story that could almost be a soap opera. At points, it's almost humorous. Other times, it's tragic, but it's true to life. So tonight, we'll look at Jacob and his wives, Genesis 29. Here's the outline, verses 1 to 8, Jacob and the water well. 9 to 14, Jacob meets Rachel. 15 to 20, Jacob gets engaged to Rachel, his engagement. 21 to 30, Jacob gets two wives. 31 to 35, Leah's children. Okay, verse 1. Remember, we left off last week with Jacob fleeing from Esau, and both his mother and father said, go, your brother wants to kill you. So where do I go? We'll go back to where Rebekah was raised in Mesopotamia, about 500 miles away, and also find a wife there, not amongst the Canaanites or the Egyptians. There's still some believers back there. So now he arrives. How long would it have taken? Well, if he went by foot, it would have taken weeks. You say, how long do you know? Well, I don't know. Anybody here ever been on a hike other than Cody in the Army and me in the Boy Scouts? You can do 20 miles in a day. If you're really good, you can do 30. So do the math on that. But it would be less if he went by donkey or horse or camel. We don't know if he had an animal. So where'd he go? Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east. When you see that in the scripture, the east means east of Israel. And on the southern part, that would be the desert area where the Moabites lived, and further south, Arabia. But the term is generally referred to further east, northeast, Mesopotamia. Later, that became Assyria in the north, Babylon in the south, Persia further east. And if you really want to keep going east, you go all the way to Afghanistan and India. So that's where he is, and that little lesson will tell you what does it mean in Matthew 2, wise men from the east came. They came almost certainly from Persia, because that's where the magi lived, these magician, philosopher, astrologers. Anyway, here's where he goes, to Mesopotamia. No doubt he had heard from his mother, Rebekah, exactly where to go to find Laban and these other relatives. But he needed a little bit more direction. So he shows up there, and he saw a well, a water well in the field. And behold, there were three flocks of sheep. Oh, it's an interesting detail, three flocks. Lying by it, for out of the well they watered the flocks. A large stone was on the well's mouth. Yet another well in the book of Genesis. We've noticed that. Remember, John 4 also. Jesus met a woman at the well. And remember, she starts saying, well, we worship here in Jacob. Well, this is a different one back in Mesopotamia. If you go to Israel, they'll still show you what they think is Jacob's well in Samaria. But nobody knows where this well is in Mesopotamia. Now, this would be a water well that they dug down from underground spring or river. And then they have a hole. But to stop things from falling in like animals or people, they put a stone across it. And they'd usually have like a rope with a bucket and maybe with a little crank, but usually just lower the bucket down, pull it up, and then pour it into a trough, sometimes a little pool. But they didn't have windmills back then. Anybody ever seen an old-fashioned windmill? I've seen them back in Texas, and they, you know, it looked like a little something like this with the thing turns around like a fan and it pumps water out of the ground. But they didn't have them back then, so they had to let a bucket down on a rope and pull it up to feed the animal, to give it to the animals. And that's what they would do. And so they're waiting now. And meanwhile, while he's there, he sees some people. Verse 4, my brethren, where are you from? And they said, well, we're from Haran. Now, when he says brethren, he could mean you're my distant relatives, or he could just say, I'm a fellow shepherd. Like you meet someone that does the same kind of work you do, say, hey, we have the same job. Hey, brother. That's what they say like in unions. So he gets to talking with them, and he says, do you know this fellow Laban? Verse 5, and they said, oh, yeah, we know him. As we shall see, Laban probably had a bad reputation. He's greedy, cheating people. So, oh, yeah, I can just hear him say, Yeah, we know Laban, yeah. You shake hands with him, you better count your fingers afterwards. Yeah. But in any case, they knew who he was. And so Jacob's is thinking, this is where I needed to be. You see, they didn't have maps and these various other electronic devices. So he says, well, okay, God is leading me. You remember chapter 24, Eliezer comes, Lord, lead me to just the right place and the right woman. Well, it's the same story here. And so he says, well, I'm in the right place. Verse 6, is he well? And they said, he's well. And look, his daughter Rachel is coming with the sheep. Here she comes. And here's a little pun here. Yeah, he's well. It's well at the well. And here comes Rachel running here. Here she comes to feed the sheep. And you remember in chapter 24 when Eliezer shows up, no sooner, here comes Rebecca. And now Rebecca's son is there, and here comes his future wife. So very close similarities. And perhaps like Eliezer had been praying, Lord, provide just the right one at the right time and place. Notice she's taking care of sheep. She's later called a shepherdess. And we find shepherds, male and female, in the Bible, like Zipporah, who was Moses' wife. And Bible often mentions men, and it's a hard, dirty job, but it mentions a few women. Okay, time for one of Pastor Daniel's stories. I remember when I lived overseas, and I didn't have a car, I didn't have enough money, but I had a motorcycle. I remember I took a trip all around Ireland, or at least part of Ireland. Ireland's a beautiful country. They call it the Emerald Isle. Everything is green, just green grass, bushes, and everything. So I remember, I want to see the old country. So you get off the big roads and go down some dirt road. And I said, this is the old, and I felt like I was going 100 or 200 years back in the past. And so there I was chugging along this bumpy road. And on the, I can just picture it in my mind, right there on the left side, there is this hedge fence. And on the other side, a sheep over there. And so I come and all of a sudden the gate opens up. And an Irish girl walks out, and it's like a traffic cop. She puts up her hand, and she's carrying this big stick in her hand, and she stops me. And so there I stop, and she whistles and waves, and here come all these sheep out. And she's dressed like really old-fashioned, long skirt, no shoes, this traditional blouse, red hair. And she comes out, and she starts leading all these sheep behind her with the stick and whistling and calling their names. And then as she goes along, I follow her on the motorcycle for, oh, I guess about half a mile. And then she opens the gate on the other side where there's a hedge, and in they go. And she closes the gate and waves, and I go on my way. A shepherdess. And some women are good at taking care of sheep. I thought you'd like that story. So here comes Rachel with the sheep. Verse 7, he says, look, it is still high day, so it'd be the heat of the day. It's not time for the cattle to be gathered together, water the sheep, and then go feed them. So if you know, sheep and cattle don't like to get along with each other, either in a pasture. And so they'd come to an agreement, we water one before we water the other. So wait your time, your turn. And meanwhile, Jacob's there, and these other shepherds, and here comes Rachel. And so what do we do? Here's this stone over the well. It would be big enough. And these other men had not moved it yet. We're not told why. Now, 9 to 14, Jacob falls in love with this young shepherdess girl. It says in verse 8, we can't do this until all the flocks are gathered together and they have rolled the stone from the well and so forth. Now, while he was still speaking with him, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. Came to pass when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone away from the well's mouth and watered the flocks. Why did he do this? He could have said, hey, you guys, you do this. I think he was trying to impress Rachel with his strength. Men do that sort of thing, don't they? You know, oh, leave that to me, and I'm going to be noble and generous. He's showing, he's already attracted to her. He's beginning to show, I'm a worthy husband. Here, I'll do that. Hey, don't you touch that. And so he must have been really strong to lift that up just by himself. Tells us that sometimes one man can do the work of several men if he's stronger and more experienced. Okay, here's my second story. Back in Dallas, a member of our church named Herb asked a bunch of the men to volunteer and help him move furniture out of a second-story apartment and then put it in a van and help us move it to another apartment. Well, we got about half a dozen of us, and only one of them was really strong, and that wasn't me. And we were saying, how do you move this? How'd you get this up here in the first place, Herb? So some of us took chairs and smaller chairs and little tables. And then we came to this huge sofa. And I was wondering, how'd they get that up here? How are we going to get it down? We had to go down the stairs. We don't want to bump the walls. And so three or four of us said, how are we going to do this? Well, you take that in. And then one man, like Jacob, says, leave it to me. He lifted the whole sofa up by himself, went through the door down the stairs without hitting the wall at all, and he put it down. The rest of us said, wow, you are strong, buddy. And he says, no sweat, no hard thing. I've done that before. Jacob was like that, evidently. These other men, it would have taken several to move the stone. He says, leave it to me. He lifts the thing up and moves it. Now, that principle also applies that sometimes some Christians are stronger than other Christians. The Bible says, let those that are strong bear with the weaknesses of the weak. Romans 14. Just like one man can do the work of five men because he's stronger and more experienced, sometimes Christians are like that. He has a certain gift that the others don't. You ever known someone has the gift of evangelism? Boy, he can witness, answer questions. And then other ones say, how do you do that? He says, well, this is what God has given me to do. So there's a principle. Same thing with experience. So here's Jacob moving the stone. Likewise, Rachel is drawn to him. And like Jacob's mother, Rebekah, she begins to show that she would make a good wife. She's not only beautiful, but she's generous and hardworking. A lesson we applied before was singles should develop good qualities and prove to be a good prospective husband or wife. So this is the beginning of the courtship there. And that was their custom. So what happens next? Verse 11, then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. That was a bold thing to do. Now, in certain countries, it would be a custom. Now, there's the old question, should a man and woman kiss on their first date or the second, or they wait for engagement, or even wait till they get married? And I've known people that, you know, at different stages. I've told you about in France, they'll kiss a lot on the cheek, men and women and so forth. Remember that if you ever go to France, they do a lot of that, sometimes just touching cheeks. But there are different customs, and the custom here was evidently to kiss someone. And so he kisses her, and that was sort of a surprise to her, but she didn't slap his face or join the Me Too movement. And have you ever been surprised by a kiss by a total stranger, and you say, what's going on here? Okay, here's my third story. I remember in Edinburgh on New Year's Eve once, I said, I'm going to go down to a certain part of town, downtown, where they say everybody comes and there's a big party for New Year's Eve. Over in Scotland, they call it Hogmanay. And so, oh boy, all those Scottish people, they were dancing and singing and doing that Highland fling. And I said, well, look at all this. And of course, you could tell many of them had drunk Scottish whiskey, Scotland's national drink. And I was just kind of looking around, and as I turned, young lady comes right up to me, grabs me, and gives me a big kiss right on the mouth. And I said, wow, total stranger. And she said, hey, Happy New Year. Later, someone said, what was it like? It tasted like Scotch whiskey. But it's a little unusual. Who is this? Well, that's how Rachel felt. Who's Jacob? But he's moving the stone. He's up to something. She knows what two and two add up to. So this was the custom there, and so she evidently went along with it. We'll get back to that. What about cultural customs that are different to us? So he not only kisses her, but now he lifts up his voice and weeps for joy. You know, they're sad tears, but they're also happy tears. I've done weddings where the bride is overcome with tears of joy, and she can hardly repeat her vows. You just get big old tears. And I've heard couples say that when That man gets on his knee and opens up that little velvet box and says, "Will you marry me?" And she just starts blubbering, you know, tears of joy. Well, that's what Jacob is doing. We're not told about Rachel, but he's realizing this is the one. Love at first sight. There is such a thing as love at first sight. I have known people that said the moment they saw that person, is either the man for the woman or the woman and the man, said, "That's the one." And it proved to be the one. Happily married for many years. But I'd also caution singles, it's not always the case. Sometimes it's just an infatuation or attractiveness or whatever else, just emotions. So be very wise on that. So here he's weeping for joy, probably hugging her. "This is the one. Thank you, Lord." And so he's weeping and he's caught up in this. So he identifies himself. Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative and that he was Rebekah's son. So she ran and told her father, "You're a distant relative." "Oh, yes, I've heard about Rebekah. That's my father's sister, so that's my aunt, so you must be my cousin. Hello, cousin Jacob." And she gets all excited, starts running off. "Oh, I got to go tell daddy about this." Just like a teenage girl, you know, says, I met the cutest boy this afternoon. I got to tell somebody about that. And so she takes off running. No doubt she had heard about Jacob indirectly through some camel caravan. No gossip spread around then. So she goes and tells Laban, and he hears about this. Verse 13, Laban heard the report about Laban, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him. So there's another friendly Middle Eastern kiss. And brought him in his house, so he told Laban all these things. So they get to talking. What do you think they talked about? I bet Laban said, "How's my sister, Rebekah? I haven't seen her in 50 years or so." Remember, it'd been a long time. So he probably said, "How's Becky? How's my sister? You know, how many children, brothers, sisters, you know, anything else? What about this fellow Isaac? Tell me everything. I want to hear it all. I'm all ears." And so they went back and forth talking like this. But Laban, as we learned before, can't be trusted. Remember, he realized Eliezer brought all those gifts on behalf of Abraham to find a wife for Isaac. This is Isaac's son, and he realizes this guy's got money, and I've got two daughters. He can just hear the shekels jingling. Yes, I can really squeeze this guy because he's Laban, Mr. Greedy. And so he's already beginning to cook up a plot here. And so just think about this. These are two cheats meeting each other. Jacob had cheated his father and his brother. Laban had cheated. So there, it's like thieves, or it's like two guys playing poker, looking at each other very carefully. So you can't really trust either one of them. Like two dogs that meet for the first time and wondering who's going to be the chief dog in all this. So there's Jacob with Uncle Laban. Okay, next section, 15 to 20, Jacob's engagement. So a part of this courtship process, he stays with them for a whole month, verse 14, and then Laban eventually says to Jacob, "You're my relative, so you're going to stay here. You're not going to work for nothing. Tell me, what will your wages be?" So they begin to haggle. "Well, I need to pay you, and we can find you a tent to stay in." Bible says the laborer is worthy of his wages. You know the old motto, boss deserves a fair day's work for a fair day's wage. But how do you determine what's fair? I don't think it should be the government setting the minimum wage and all that. There's a place for individual bargaining and collective bargaining. That's what unions often do. They say, "Well, here's how many people we have and all that. Well, let's see the budget so we can come to some agreement." There is a place for unions stepping in and negotiating like that. I've known cases where I said to a man, I said, "Are you a member of a union?" "Yes." "How could they stand for the way that they are cheating you?" There is a place for unions. Sometimes unions misuse this process. My mind goes back many, many years ago when some unions had a bad reputation for being soft on communism. Some of you remember Walter Reuther in the United auto workers. He'd gone to Russia and said it's paradise on earth, and he learned the hard way. But after that, people said, can we trust him? Anybody remember George Meany? Well named. He was a tough old bird. He was the head of the AFL-CIO for many years. He was vehemently anti-communist. If he found any union members that were playing footsie with the communists, out. He was strongly anti-communist. I say that because also back in the 80s, what was it that helped overthrow communism in Poland that led to the domino effect that spread throughout Europe? It was the union movement led by Lech Walesa, and they said, we're going to stand up for the workers, negotiate this, and we want an inequitable arrangement in our country. The communists didn't believe in unions. I know that for a fact because back in Edinburgh at that time, I'd be sharing the gospel at a certain place downtown every week, and there'd be a member of the Socialist Party and there'd be a member of the Communist Party. We used to debate and talk like that. And a member of the Socialists said, we need stronger unions. And the Communists said, we don't want any unions. Communists didn't believe in it. Anyway, that's a long story. There is a place for collective bargaining. And I apply that to you, your place of work. It's totally legitimate to go to the boss and say, I've been working here so long. Isn't it time for a raise? And he'll say, well, yes, but let's consider this. So here's these two men arguing about, well, not even arguing, just negotiating how much Laban will give to Jacob to work for him. But like in a game of poker, someone ups the ante. Jacob just didn't want to work for Uncle Laban. He was there not just to run from Esau. You know what he wanted to see on the table? Miss Rachel. He wanted to throw her into the equation. Okay, Laban, I'll work for you. I'll work for minimum wage if you give me some little extra. Like what? That daughter over there. Let's work that into the equation. He wants to negotiate that as well. But what does Laban say? He begins to do some of this negotiating. Laban had two daughters, verse 16. The name of the elder was Leah. The name of the younger was Rachel. Well, Jacob wanted Rachel. He wasn't concerned about Miss Leah. Two sisters, just like Mary and Martha. They weren't twins like Jacob and Esau. Interesting, in some families, they have no children. Other ones have a large amount. Some, have you ever known a family where it's all boys or all girls? I knew a family back in New Orleans had six girls and not a single boy. And I remember asking the father, didn't you want any sons? And he said, he literally put his glasses down. He said, how do you think I got six daughters? We just kept trying. But I remember we used to have a family here, one boy and six girls, and another one, it was the other way around. Principle is, you take what God gives you. And later, Jacob would have one daughter and 12 sons. God determines it. Now, ignore superstitions like if you take a hen's egg and bury it, you know, with a certain feather, then that guarantees you're going to get a boy. No, there's silly superstitions going around. Ignore them all. Leave it to God. Okay, verse 17. What about these two girls? We're already told it. We're told that Rachel will be beautiful. What about Leah, verse 17, Leah's eyes were delicate. Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance. What does it mean, delicate? Most scholars look at this Hebrew word and says it probably means poor eyesight. And remember, they didn't have glasses back then. And in some parts of the world today, they don't have glasses. By the way, if you have old glasses, donate to some ministry that can bring them overseas and give them to people that can barely see. Some people have an eye disease, and it's always something running down. So evidently she had something about her eyes. She couldn't see very well, and that's another thing that was not good about her. Maybe she had crossed eyes. You ever known someone like that? Many, many, many years ago, there was a world-famous preacher we still appreciate that had one eye that was crossed. You ever heard of George Whitfield? And his enemies made fun of him. They called him Dr. Squintum. And when he'd go and preach, he'd say, here comes Dr. Squintum's medicine show. And they'd all laugh at him. But he had a cross eye, and people would make fun of that. But it was very interesting. God used that. And they talked to people that said they went to hear him and to laugh at him. And they said, we stopped laughing 5 minutes after he started preaching. We didn't notice if he had one bad eye, two eyes, or three eyes. what God said through that man was amazing. Now, there's a lesson there. We're born with different strengths and weaknesses, like Leah, like George Whitfield, but we need to rely upon God. Bill Gothard used to say, when we are born with something like this, that's God's mark of ownership. Like, this is something I gave to you. Look that up in the book of Exodus. I was the one that put that in you. Good eyesight, bad eyesight, strength, beauty, whatever. We're all born with certain physical characteristics. Some people are born, you can tell they're going to be big and strong, and other ones very beautiful. Other one, very early in life, they show they have a musical talent. What does Leah have going for her? Well, not attractiveness. Now, sometimes these physical weaknesses and characteristics can and should be corrected later with surgery. My brother, my older brother, was born like Whitfield with one eye in. And when he was a little boy, all the other boys made fun of him. So my parents got him to a doctor. And he had eye surgery, and it was corrected to this very day. Nothing wrong with surgery or treatments to correct certain weaknesses that we have. What about Rachel? Says here she was beautiful. Probably had always been beautiful, more than her older sister. Now, this is interesting. You remember Sarah, wife of Abraham, says to be very beautiful, even into old age. What about Rebecca? Same thing. Now, the third wife of one of the patriarchs, very beautiful. And there are other beautiful women in the Bible, Bathsheba, Abigail, and others. So now it's time to really negotiate. He says, okay, let's bring Rachel into this negotiating. Verse 18, Jacob loved Rachel. So he said, I'll serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. Notice the younger daughter, that one, not Leah. I don't want her. I want Rachel. I'm in love with her. So Laban, oh, he knows, I got him. I got him over a barrel. Well, how long will you work for me? How much? 10 years? 10 years? Well, okay, how about 9, 8, 7? 7. So they shake on it, maybe exchange goats or something. They did the deal, made a covenant. 7 years. And Laban said, it's better that I should give her to you than I should give her to another man. Stay with me. And so Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, verse 20, and they seemed only a few days to him because of the love he had for her. Boy, he was willing to wait, must have really loved this girl. By the way, this is part of what I mentioned earlier. The bride price of the customs back then, man not only showed he's able to support her and he's honest and all that, but they would exchange certain things comparable to a dowry the father gives the daughter. So he now gives certain other gifts. We saw that in chapter 24. Laban agreed, and they seal it with this banquet. Rachel went along with it too. And so he said, okay, the engagement is ready now. Let's get the wedding ceremony. He probably said, let's get it going soon, but he's already cooking up a scheme. Verse 20, Jacob must have really loved Rachel to work 7 years for her. So after the 7 years, it's time to get married. Now, there's principle there. Sometimes a couple should have a very short courtship and long engagement. Other ones, a longer courtship and a short engagement. But he was willing to go, you know, he should have said 7 years. Can I marry her and then work the 7 years? No, the father said, Laban said, no, you work and then you get her. Principle there is a man that's, you know, courting a certain young lady needs to go to the father and says, now, I want to marry her. Can we do that this summer? And what if the man says, no, wait a year? And I've known cases where the father said, you're good, but you need to develop something, get a better job or something to prove yourself. So are you willing to wait a year? And I've known men says, I'm not going to wait a year. And I said, you better wait a year because that's her father. And he has the right and you need to please him and God's going to use him and so forth. So some men will wait and other ones don't. And the Bible does not approve of running off in an elopement and obeying the parents. So Jacob went along with this because he really did love her. 7 years worth. Okay, next section, 21 to 30, Jacob gets two wives. Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, my days are now fulfilled, that I may go into her, consummate it. 7 years are up. So Laban gathered all the men of the place and made a feast. Okay, now the wedding feast came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, brought her to Jacob, probably with a thick veil over her, and they went in to her. So the ceremony has been completed. Now they go to the marital tent, the bridal suite, as it were. By the way, some things are worth waiting for, and Jacob says, oh, this is finally it. So they do the ceremony, where she'd have the dark veil, they have some sort of preacher there, and then they have all these witnesses, including Laban, Laban's wife. Rachel would have been there. See the setting here. But you know how the story turns out. He married someone other than Rachel. It came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to Jacob and went into her. So Laban does a switch. You think you're getting Rachel? Put the veil over Leah. And Leah, don't say anything, and you too, Rachel. They were all in on this, not just Laban. Leah was in on it. Rachel was in on it. She didn't speak up. She was there, and she had a veil. She could have said, wait a second, I'm Rachel. No. They were in on this, but the bulk of the blame goes on Laban. Reminds you of Rebekah and Jacob's conspiracy to cheat Isaac. And Esau now is the father, and the girl's going along with this conspiracy to cheat Jacob. He's the only one that didn't know what was going on. How do you think he felt when he found out? He said, they played me for a fool. And Laban's probably over there laughing. I'm sure he was laughing. How come Jacob didn't know until the next morning? Well, it was dark. He probably got drunk. And she probably didn't say anything. And so he figured, this is Rachel. They consummated. And then the next morning, he finds out. Verse 23. Came to pass in the evening, he took Leah, went into her. And then Laban gave his handmaid, the servant, to Leah. Came to pass in the morning, behold, it was Leah. What? You know, the sun's come up. Oh, hello, hello, my darling. Pulls the veil. Leah, what are you doing here? I imagine she smiled and said, I'm your wife. What? It's almost humorous. What is going on around here? You mean you? Where's Rachel? And it's too late, Jacob. You should have lifted the veil before. Now it's too late. I am Mrs. Jacob. Imagine his surprise. Imagine his humiliation. Sometimes that happens, though, even today. Not literally like this, but a man or a woman will lie or deceive someone to get a spouse. Anybody here ever know anybody like that? I do. Man I had to counsel in another city. And I said, you need to develop that love you first had. He says, I don't think I ever really loved her. And I said, then why'd you marry her? I tried to do the right thing. What do you mean? Well, we slept together. She said she was pregnant. So I said, okay, I'll marry you. And then he says, how do you think I felt after the honeymoon when she said, honey, I'm not pregnant at all. I just wanted you to marry me. He said, she played me for a fool. She's cheated me. So you see, this sort of thing still goes on. People imitating Laban, trying to unload a daughter, lying about it. Implying sometimes she's very rich, and sometimes a man will fall for that. I don't care if she's looks good, she's got the money, and finds out later she doesn't have the money. And it goes both ways, men and women, and they're imitating this sordid thing here in Genesis 29. So he lifts the veil, finds out married the wrong woman. Verse 26 and 27, he marches over there probably very angry. Laban, what did you do? What is this that you have done to me? Verse 25, was it not for Rachel that I served you? Why then have you deceived me? Laban probably very smug said, it's not our custom to marry the younger one before the older one, Jacob. You should have known that. How was I to know? I'm sure Laban said, well, in any case, it's too late to do anything about this. Because they said, well, you don't have grounds for divorce or annulment. You know, it's the old thing. You don't buy a pig in a poke. You always want to go check it out. Well, don't blame me if you didn't check it out. Why didn't you talk to her before you said I do? Don't blame me. Well, he was to blame. But Jacob should have checked this out beforehand. So this is a case of literally baiting and switching. He wanted to marry Rachel, and so now Laban unloads the other daughter on him, and he's cheated. So he says, I can see poor old Jacob. Okay, I'm married to Leah. How do I get Rachel also? Remember, he's compromising now. He'll say, well, I'll get two wives. What will you take for Rachel? Be honest this time. And so they negotiate, and he says, another 7 years. Poor, you feel sorry for Jacob, but he brought this upon himself. Look at verse 29. Laban said, gave his maid to Bilhah, to the daughter Rachel, to be the servant. So now Jacob marries Rachel, goes into her verse 30. And he also loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served Laban for still another 7 years. He said, I'm not going to wait another 7 years until I get Rachel. You're going to pawn off someone else on me. I'll serve 7 more years. I got witnesses. I'll take an oath, but I want Rachel now. Okay. So marries her. Wonder how Leah felt at this time. Like, you really didn't want me. He didn't want Leah. It implies that Leah really did want Jacob. And Rachel kind of caught it up in all this. She loved him, but she was willing to wait. And I imagine Laban threatened her, Rachel, you better be quiet or the jig's up and you're out. You'll go get a whipping or something like that. This is sordid. But I want to point out one interesting detail. Verse 30, he loved Rachel more than Leah. Doesn't say he didn't love Leah at all. He probably showed some affection for her. But then look a little bit further. It says that she was unloved, verse 31. Well, which was it? It's that word love. It can mean either I love her, or unloved means not loved, or loved less. You remember Jesus said in one gospel, whoever loves father or mother more than me, he's not saying you don't love your father or mother, but in Luke 14, he says you must hate your parents. What do you mean hate? It means love less. Sometimes to hate means love less so that you love God more. So he didn't hate Leah. He loved her less than Rachel. Keep that in mind when it says, for example, in Romans 9, Jacob have I loved, Esau have I hated. He had a general love for Esau, but a greater love and election for Jacob. So he had some affection for her, but he mainly loved Rachel. Just like Isaac and Rebekah loved both of their sons, but one loved one more than the other. These principles are revolving. Okay, the last section, 31 to 35, Leah's children. You get the impression that Leah felt unloved by Jacob, and she loved him, and it was unrequited love. So, verse 31, the Lord saw that Leah was unloved or loved less, so he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. So God knew her grief, and God still sees the tears and hears the cries of the lonely or one that says, I want to be loved. And Leah wanted to be loved. She'd probably never had anybody come and ask her for a date, let alone to get married. And here's Jacob. I want Jacob, not because he's wealthy, but he's industrious and he'd be a good husband. And Jacob didn't care as much about her. But there are people like that today that are very lonely, weeping, won't somebody love me? I want to be loved. That's what you feel sorry for Leah. Even though she wasn't perfect, she wants that love that Jacob's not fully given to her. And so the Lord had mercy on her. It says, opened her womb, so she began to have children. Verse 32, Leah conceived, bore a son, called his name Reuben. According to the Bible, the father begets and the wife conceives. And so she chose the name, curious that she chose the name, Reuben, which means see a son. Reuben. Later somebody named a sandwich after that. And also that was the real name of one of the most colorful characters in the history of Western movies. Anybody ever see True Grit? John Wayne? Well, he was named Rooster Cogburn, but that wasn't his real name. In the sequel to it, Katharine Hepburn finds out his real name was Reuben. Reuben? I still remember, Reuben, but you lady, you'd better call me Rooster. Well, Reuben's an honorable name. I've known one or two people with that name. So here comes the first son. But it wasn't the only one. She realized God had had mercy on her, and so should we when God gives us a blessing, and be sure to thank him. And so she says, oh, now, maybe now my husband will love me. She conceived again, verse 33, and bore another son and said, because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he therefore has given me this son also. She calls his name Simeon, which means heard. But she still feels unloved, so she keeps going for Jacob. Let's have another one. Maybe my husband will love me if I keep having these sons. You know, a woman that wants love will do almost anything. And sometimes some single women will do things they shouldn't do to get a man to love her. She has a third son, verse 34, names him Levi, which means attached. And then a fourth son, verse 35, names him Judah, which means praise. And then it says she stopped bearing children for the time being. So it's one after another after another. And there's Rachel having none and Leah having all the children. Okay, here are five lessons. Number one, God provides, but he also tests us. God provided a wife for Jacob, but he put him to the test. God promised, by the way, some people should stay single, but God had promised Jacob that he would have many descendants. So Jacob, you're going to get married, and I'm going to provide. And when Rachel showed up, he jumped the gun and said, that's got to be the one, was it? Which of the sisters should he have married? Hard decision for some people. Sometimes a girl's dating two boys. Well, which one? If you have to ask which one to marry, don't marry either one yet. It should only be one at a time that you have to choose between. Kind of like Yogi Berra's old statement, what do you do when you come to a fork in the road? Take it. But sometimes a couple has to make the decision. Sometimes a man says, well, which one do I marry? And he wanted to go for Rachel. Laban didn't offer him the choice. If he did, Jacob would have said, well, Rachel, I don't care about Leah. In retrospect, maybe Leah would have been the better choice. Think about it. Rachel was barren. Leah was very fertile, and God had said, you are going to have a lot of children. Maybe providentially this was God's reminder, Jacob, you went for beauty rather than fertility and godliness. Those factors have to be considered even today. God promises to provide for us, but we need to be wise and not hasty and apply biblical principles when God tests us. God is testing us. Number two, don't go by appearances only, as Jacob did. Love at first sight. He didn't care about Leah, didn't look for her qualities. He just wanted a beautiful wife. But the Bible warns about that. Not saying that beauty isn't important. It's not all important. You know the verses. Let me just read one to you. Proverbs chapter 31, all about the godly wife. And it says this, charm is deceitful and beauty is passing, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Couples, then when they're courting, should look beyond just simply physical appearance, beautiful wife, strong husband, and certainly look beyond just simply money. They should look for character. The book of Proverbs also warns about an ungodly woman that has beauty is like a big ugly pig with a gold ring in its mouth. And sometimes that gold ring is a beautiful woman, but no godliness, no wisdom. And I knew a man like that in another church. He was middle-aged, and at the time he was about 50, and he'd been married to this woman. She says, she's still beautiful. She's as ignorant as a hammer. She is as ungodly as you can be. I went after beauty and now I'm paying the price. He says, Kurt, learn from my mistake. Beauty is not the main thing. It's certainly not the only thing. Don't go by appearance only. Go for character. But that principle applies in other ways. A good real estate agent will say, don't just look at the big, beautiful house. Is it appropriate to you? The right kind of rooms and all this, can you afford it? Look at other principles. Same thing when you buy a car. Or when you've been offered a certain job. Don't just say, well, look at the money. Consider the hours. Is this legitimate work or would it involve unbiblical principles? Don't just go by appearances. By the way, that would also apply to if you ever choose another pastor. Don't just go for one of these that has big, full head of hair and strong muscles. Go for someone, I don't want to say like me, but I have known churches that say, look at him. Boy, he's handsome. Boy, he'll bring in the young people. Ah, that's a recipe for disaster. Remember, Elisha was a bald prophet too. Anyway, my point is don't just go by appearances on various things. Remember, the Bible says, man looks at the outward man, God looks at the heart. Jacob is a bad example here. Lesson number three, what goes around comes around. This is so obvious. You reap what you sow. That's not karma, it's just God's providence. You do something wrong, it's going to come back. What goes around comes around. Jacob cheated, and now he's being cheated. The cheater gets cheated. We call this poetic justice. The punishment fits the crime. Did you notice all the similar parallels with him cheating his brother and cheating the father? Let me just mention some. It involved a disguise, a wrong identity in both cases, someone hidden from sight, someone that had dim eyes. There is Isaac, eyesight, and now Leah with poor eyesight. A parent's involvement in this. There's Rebekah that put Jacob up to it. Now there's Laban being involved in this. And in one, it was two brothers. Here it's two sisters and on and on. In other words, poetic justice at the end of all this. You know what Jacob should have said? Oy vey, I had it coming. I should have seen the signals. And now it's too late. What goes around comes around. By the way, it also, what goes around comes around on good things. That's what Paul was saying when he said, you reap what you sow. If you sow good, God will pay you back good, not just financially, in other ways. Jesus said, blessed are the merciful, they shall receive mercy. Paul said, Proverbs says, he that gives to the poor lends to the Lord, he will repay. So what goes around comes around, for good or for bad. And we learn from this lesson, be careful. If you do something, if you cheat someone else, God might just arrange for you to be cheated. So be fair and honest. Lesson number four. Cultural customs may be good or bad, like kissing, or the oldest should marry before the younger. Remember, he said that's our custom here. Is that binding on us spiritually? No, this was a cultural custom. So when you read the Bible, you'll find certain things that are customs and other ones that are good examples and divine law. How do you tell the difference? You ever thought about that? You see some example like this. You say, oh, well, the oldest has to get married first. Was that a custom or is that something that's part of God's principles and laws? How do you tell the difference? Biblical wisdom. Know your Bible. Know how to apply biblical principles. To see if it applies. It might be just a custom. It might be a divine law. For example, here Jacob marrying two sisters. That was a bad custom. God would forbid it. Especially marrying two sisters. Not just two women, two sisters. That made a doubly bad custom. Laban went along with it. Nobody here seemed to object to that. But we would. Beware when the government legalizes certain customs. Because then people say it must be good because it's legal. Such as legalizing marijuana and other things, homosexuality. Just because it's a cultural custom doesn't mean God puts his seal of approval upon it. We need to know what is good and what is simply a custom and even a bad custom. So we should respect certain cultural customs, you know, when in Rome do as the Romans do, only so far. If you travel or meet someone from another culture that has certain customs, there are certain ones you can go along with. Missionaries, they dress like the people in India, and if they go to India, they don't eat hamburgers because the Indians are vegetarians. There are certain customs you can go along with. Other ones you don't go along with. It takes biblical wisdom. Last lesson, number five, God blesses the unblessed. We see that in Leah. There are different kinds of blessings. We feel sorry for Leah. She hadn't been blessed with beauty or good eyesight, but she was blessed with being a good mother, a productive one. God's blessings, they vary. She desperately wanted to be loved. She was hurting, lonely. Just like some women today will do anything, and literally anything, to get love from a man. You know what I mean by that. Unrequited love is sad. But she too gets poetic justice. Remember I said what goes around comes around? She was felt unloved, no beauty. She was lucky to find a man, so she went along with this. But you can almost overlook that because she also received mercy. God had mercy on poor Leah and gave her children in abundance, gave beauty to Rachel, no children yet. Leah, no beauty, you'll get the children. This is the hand of God. Having children is a greater blessing than physical beauty or wealth. Oh, that parents would realize that is a great blessing, those little ones. I heard an amen at the back there. Okay. We need to see what God considers the greater blessing. So Leah gets a greater blessing than Rachel. Also, she had given the poor eyesight, and there were no glasses then, but God often makes up the differences. Just like someone that is blind develops a very good sense of hearing. Leah, maybe because of this not being beautiful, she developed other characteristics. And the same thing is true with us. We might be weak in one area, but God uses that to make us strong in another one. Lastly, God blesses the unblessed, and Rachel recognized the hand of God in her life. So she names these children, and she says, God gave the children. We too should recognize God's the one that gives us whatever is a good blessing. Well, that's our lesson for tonight. A little informal, but does anybody have any questions on this unusual story? Any observations here?
Leah also had Judah.
Yes. And we'll find out later, Reuben didn't get the great blessing. Who got it? Judah. And also he split with another son named Joseph. Any others? Questions? Observations? Let's pray and then we'll sing. Father, this unusual story is very true to life for today. Help us learn from these examples. Help us to avoid bad examples. Help us to imitate good ones. And give us the wisdom to know the difference between examples and customs and your law. In Jesus' name, amen.